morning. This is Word Made Flesh, the radio ministry of the Lenawee County Mission. For the next few minutes, you'll hear how God is reaching out to those staying at the mission and how He's reaching out to the greater church community. Now, here's Lenawee County Mission's Executive Director, Pastor Stephen Palmer, with this week's word.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to this week's edition of Word Made Flesh. How are we doing?
Good.
Okay, we've been studying a lot about the topic of lust. When we talk about lust, we're not just talking about our sexual desires and the fulfillment and pursuit of pleasure, but all kinds of things that we could pursue that we believe to be the good that we think we can obtain aside from the source of the good, right? You remember talking, kind of defining lust that way, seeking the good, seeking to know the good without knowing the source is lust. And then following on that, we looked at temptation. And here recently, we looked at the temptation of Jesus and how in the Gospels, it says the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, is what drove Jesus into the wilderness. And we find that somewhat interesting because sometimes we think temptation is somewhat satanically driven. That God, through the Spirit, puts Jesus in a position of the wilderness in which the temptations occur. And we kind of wrestle with that. And what we learned out of that is that we all need our wilderness experiences. So today on this edition of Word Made Flesh, what I'd like to maybe look at is kind of a four-stage model on the biblical narrative, as well as our own, that parallels our own spiritual, our own personal walk, our own journey. And we have a biblical journey, but we also have our own personal journeys, right? That I think will tie in the whole lust, the whole temptation, the whole wilderness, kind of wrap up what we've been studying. All right, we're all familiar with the Exodus story. You may want to briefly tell me what they know about the Exodus story, who the characters are, maybe what the main event is, so to speak.
Well, the Egyptians held Israel in bondage. They had them as slaves, and Moses led them out into the wilderness.
Okay, nice. Wow, succinctly stated. I appreciate that. Yeah, so we have Egypt. Pharaoh's the head of Egypt. Egypt has the Hebrews in bondage for about 400 years, trying to use them as slaves to build their vision of their empire, so to speak. God hears their cry, and God responds by sending Moses. And then we would say that after God liberates them from Egypt, God takes them into the desert, somewhat of what we were talking about the other day. They had this wilderness experience. And in the midst of the wilderness experience, and even prior to that, the instruction, kind of the way the Spirit sent Jesus into the wilderness, Moses gets sent back to Egypt because God has heard their cry because of his Sinai experience, mountain experience. So in that sense, God, right, through Sinai in the wilderness. The Spirit, you know, Jesus through the Spirit in the wilderness. You get the idea, the story really hasn't changed too much. Now, in here, in our Life Change Addictions Program, we talk about we all have our Egypts. Our addiction is our Egypt. That's our bondage. We've been in bondage to it. I don't really know what's going on in all the lives of our listening audience, but everyone has their Egypt. Everyone has their bondage. Everyone is in need of liberation. But Egypt also represents something even deeper. We could rightly say Adam and Eve had their Egypt, right? Because when we were looking at the Adam and Eve story, I'm lost and what have you, we come to realize that they made a decision to kind of turn away from, in a sense, the kingdom that God had envisioned. The vision of God's kingdom is a vision of peace, of shalom. Adam and Eve's participation in pursuing their lust, it makes it their Egypt. And Egypt always in the Bible represents anti-kingdom. So gentlemen, when we're engaged in our addiction, we're anti-kingdom. So anybody who's engaged in an anti-kingdom, now that can be communities, that can be individuals, that can be empires, that can be social systems, institutions. We have all kinds of things in our culture, in our modern day world in which we are placed, that are anti-kingdom. But God hears the cry of those who are oppressed. by the occupiers from the anti-kingdom. Make sense? God heard your cry.
Yep.
Brought you to Oneway County, Michigan. So Egypt is even more than just bondage. Being what we are really in bondage to is anti-kingdom. God hears the cry. Then God offers liberation, redemption, salvation. All those nice theological words we like to use to talk about God's intervention on providing a way out of the anti-kingdom into the kingdom. We call that our Sinai experience. That's what Moses experienced with the burning bush on the mountaintop. When he go through the wilderness experience, where is he leading them to first and foremost? Sinai. It's where we get the Ten Commandments. God speaks again. I'm looking for a kingdom people. And in the Old Testament, we'll talk, I'm looking for some priests and rulers. I mean, what do priests do?
Preach.
Oversee the people.
Rule, kind of.
Okay.
Like Levi example.
Teach.
Okay.
They kind of oversee the community of the church?
All right. We can call them overseers, but basically they're a mediator. They mediate between the community of faith, and the community of faith is what God's always looking for, because the community of faith is supposed to be the royal priesthood. It's supposed to be the community of shalom. It's supposed to be the kingdom people. And the priest kind of mediates between the kingdom people and the king, God. And in the Old Testament, we're all called to be priests and rulers. So in our individual lives, we become mediators between God and the community, the kingdom people we find ourselves. And we're going to be members of the kingdom people, the community of God, the shalomic community of God. Then we also need to be, anti-kingdom. So in our wilderness experience, we discover the king that leads the kingdom people. And the way we discover that is the wilderness. It strips us of everything. We encounter grace through Sinai.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's fine and dandy. We're all walking around a desert with God leading us. And for us today, we can say we're walking around this desert with Jesus leading us. Where are we being led to? That's kind of what it's like. Really, I got to spend all this time out here in this wilderness eating this quail and this manna.
He's breaking us down to where there's nothing left of us to realize that he's the only one that can provide the sustenance we need to survive.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what grace does to us. It strips us of all of our false dependencies, so we come to the realization that we are completely and fully dependent upon God. We come to that realization, Mark, and then so we're going to follow this God through this wilderness. Where?
The promised land.
Okay, so we have a destination, all right? And then over time, this destination becomes known as Jerusalem, the city of shalom.
Right? So we have our own Jerusalem, so to speak?
So to speak, yeah. I mean, Jesus talks about temples, and yeah, it's...
And that's where we stand firm in the Lord and partner up with Him?
Well, understand that, biblically speaking, Jerusalem isn't just a geographical location, located over in Israel.
So is the Blue House on Broad Street Jerusalem?
It can be our Jerusalem. If we understand Jerusalem, the promise of what, or the direction, the goal, the telos, right, the end that we're being directed towards, having encountered, been liberated from our Egypt... Right, our anti-kingdom participation, so that we are participating in the kingdom. We had a full revelation of the blessing that comes out of being a kingdom people. Jerusalem, right, the goal of peace is the blessing. So there's this movement that we could call bondage, liberation, and we're liberated for blessing.
What is that movement called?
I'm not sure there's an actual name for the movement. We see the movement, let's call it the Bible movement. It's kind of the movement, it's the progression. It's the evolutionary relationship of God with God's people. That's what I'm saying, if Adam and Eve participated in anti-kingdom, there's evidence that this becomes anti-kingdom because their very children are killing each other.
So our best defense against anti-kingdom is a strong Jerusalem.
Yes, but here's the thing. We have then taken our definition of blessing, but the blessing, the rich blessing that we have is really in the small things. We get tempted by Babylon. See, our Babylon is really a movement back toward anti-kingdom because of our lust of wanting more and more blessing. And we get things like the health and wealth prosperity gospel. I want more and more of the blessing. Now, if you look at the story of Jesus, when he shows up, that's pretty much what's happened with the religious establishment of his time. you guys have been watching some videos, and you can see, archaeologically speaking, some of those religious leaders of his time lived pretty lavishly, luxuriously. And they would, in a sense, would justify that because we're blessed. So the temptation, once we've reached our blessed union, right, when we've reached the teleological, the end of what God's vision is for God's creation, the Shalomic community, the Jerusalem, the blessing that Isaiah speaks about in chapter 11. Young kids sticking their hands down the cobra's den and not getting bit. You know, wolves no longer eating the lambs. It's kind of a vision of peace. If we still have a little Adam and Eve in us, that's not enough. That's not good enough. And so Babylon is always the temptation to revisit our lust. Now, we live in a 21st century culture that is just inundated with those temptations. Okay, that's kind of that little four-step overview I was talking about. Feedback.
You're talking about wanting more and more blessings. Makes me think that, you know, this Jerusalem that we're trying to build rather than stockpiling blessings so that we're more blessed. The idea is to bring more people into Jerusalem rather than building up a more blessed Jerusalem, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and the invitation is extended to everyone. Just like when we look at the life of Jesus, even though he stood against some of the empirical establishment, right, the empire, he stood against the religious establishment, although he was fully Jewish. Right? So he's not anti-Jewish. It's just saying the religious establishment has really waned from its God-given responsibility to the kingdom people. So it's not just, we're not brought into the kingdom to become recruiters, per se. But at the same time, we realize that God's invitation is for everyone. Jesus extended it to the Roman Empire, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the tax collectors, the prostitutes. No one was excluded from the invitation. But let's be realistic, not everyone said yes to the invitation.
So should we be trying to make the invitation and Jerusalem more appealing by making it desirable rather than going out there and trying to recruit, as you say?
It's an interesting model. The paradigm there.
Promotion by attraction.
Exactly. And one could say that could be very Wall Streetish, so to speak. It could be consumeristic. For example, I mean, you can talk to a lot of pastors who are trying to grow churches, and they're going, yeah, do we have to come up with gimmicks to get people to know about the love of Jesus? Or do kingdom people just love? Now, when you read John, there's something about those Christians. You know, look at how they love one another. And we've talked in this particular house, so we study extensively what the way of love is like. Kingdom people practice the way of love. That in and of itself isn't that it will attract people. But here's the thing. We follow Jesus as kingdom people practicing the way of love even to our enemies, even to the anti-kingdom people. And kind of like the Mahatma Gandhis, Martin Luther King Jr.'s, the Oscar Romero's, the, you know, Dietrich Bonhoeffer's, we can go on and on, the Jesus people. In doing so, enemies become kingdom people. So it's not about recruiting. It's about authentically living the life with God that God created us to have. And you've heard me say before, when we look at Jesus, it doesn't just be a mechanism in order to spend eternity in heaven with God. If we start seeing that Jesus really teaches us, shows us, encourages us, empowers us to be genuine human beings, whose God-given ordination upon them is to be eternal in that relationship with God. And so if we're being genuine human beings, that can be quite attractive to the anti-kingdom people. So your vocation is really to be a genuine human being. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining us on this week's edition of Word Made Flesh. May God's grace, peace, love, and joy be with you always.
Thank you for listening to Word Made Flesh, the radio ministry of Lenawee County Mission. We hope you'll join us again next Sunday morning. In the meantime, if you'd like to know more about the programs we offer at the Lenawee County Mission, or if you'd like to know about volunteer opportunities we have available, please go to our website at lcmission.org or call us at 265-4019.